Welcome to the No One Fights Alone podcast. This podcast is dedicated to mental wellness for first responders and beyond. Through powerful stories, personal experiences, and expert insights, we explore the challenges and triumphs of maintaining resilience in the face of adversity. Together, we remind you, no one fights alone.
Max, my friend, we're back. No One Fights Alone podcast.
Yes, how you doing, bro?
Doing great. How are you, bud?
I'm good. We just came off a pretty tumultuous week with my dad and his health, and things are going great there. I find myself in this really awesome space of gratitude. I have a great family and great, just good things. But yeah, I'm excited to be here, man.
Yeah, me too. We had it's been a crazy week. Been kind of a different week. Yesterday was our 11th anniversary of Corey's line of duty death. So always it's much better now to get together with coworkers and some of Corey's family and stuff to remember him and whatnot. So it was a good day yesterday. But yeah, just kind of one of those.
Good for you, man. Those are heavy days. It's hard to navigate, try to have joy of fellowship, but also in the same moment and same emotional state, honor the loss of a loved one like what you did. Well, that is a great opportunity just to pause and say, I am really excited about our guest coming on today. Not only a former law enforcement and a veteran of the United States Air Force, but a very dear friend of mine and a Chateau alum. We went through Chateau together. Lily Bodway. I'm going to say your full name, Lillian Maria Melina Bodway, better known as Lucky Lily. Hi,
that's
Lily.
What you call me. Hi, Brad. Class of 21. What? Good.
Welcome to the No One Fights Alone podcast. How are you?
Good, good. I'm great. Excited to be here.
Oh, I'm so glad you're here. Honored to have you. You have an amazing story, but you hail from Phoenix, and specifically, well, actually you moved. I don't know exactly what part of Phoenix you live. I think it's West Side. Is that right? You live over west somewhere?
Yep. South LA. Yeah.
Yeah. Phoenix, Phoenix PD for 17 years, 18 years, United States Air Force. You've got quite a story. But you have a smile on your face for the viewers that, or the listeners that can't see. She has a countenance about her that is one of hope and strength, and we're hoping to hear how she got that today.
Yep, yep.
Well,
is this my
let's.
Part?
No, well, I was just kind of teeing that up. We don't have to go anywhere with it, but. Let's start from kind of the beginning of your story, because your story is pretty amazing. And I know we don't have, 50 minutes is pretty hard to put anybody's story in, but yours is pretty amazing. And, take us on a journey here for a little bit. Tell us about tell us who you are and where you come from.
Well, I am the youngest of six. My mother was a single mother, entrepreneur. She ran several business, hotel, restaurant, bar, you name it, cafeteria in Mexico. And then I moved to Phoenix, actually Tucson, when I was married, had my first child during my first of many marriages. I'm like one of those celebrities that have like a punch card of how many times they've been married.
I love that for you.
I think this last one was free, but, anyways, so lived in Tucson, did some public relations, after my divorce, joined the military, the Air Force Reserves as intel operations. And I was incredibly bored. So I cross trained into special investigations. So I was a special air quotes agent. And then after I went to the military, I actually moved to Phoenix to join Phoenix PD. I was there for about 5 years patrol, did 6 years in child crimes. I was recruited because they pulled me right out of patrol in the middle one night. Pretty much the detectives pulled me aside. They took all my uniform gear off, and here I am in my undershirt, my pants, hand me a notepad and say, go get a confession out of this guy. And I did. He got like 65 years. And after that, they're like, okay, well, see you tomorrow. You come back as a detective. And at the time, I thought it was a great idea. I mean, I just like that to get out of the patrol car. Not that it was bad, but it was my goal ultimately. I was there for about 6 years in child crimes. Then I transferred to robbery investigations after recognizing that I was getting a little bit burnt out there. And then I was recruited after probably a couple year, 2-3 years in robbery. I was recruited into homicide, where pretty much it was more apparent that I started the burnout. I was not as dedicated to my job, and I started drinking. And actually just recently, my husband was telling me that a couple people made a comment about, Lily, there were a couple times where, you could clearly see that she was hungover, and she smelled of alcohol still. So it was probably one of those days where you just get a couple hours of sleep, take a shower and shake it off and go back into work. So, the wheels started kind of falling off there. And my work started suffering, and I wasn't producing as well as I used to in child crimes when I was brand new, bright-eyed and bushy-tailed right out of the street. And eventually, I made a mistake. I took a piece of evidence home after retrieving it from somebody that was incarcerated. And by then, they were watching me, and I got busted. So I got like 24 hours off out of that. At the time, I was very angry. I thought it was a witch hunt. And
of course, you didn't do anything wrong.
No. It wasn't my fault. It wasn't like I was drinking, showing up late or anything like that at all.
Yeah, totally.
It was a witch hunt. So, And then shortly after that, I was told that I was not going to make probation, because they have like a 1 year probation, of course, when you first go to detectives in any detective position. And I wasn't going to make probation. I was going to have to go back to patrol. So I refused to go back to patrol. How my ego, of course, at that time, it was like, how is it possible that I could go back to patrol? I am the tip of the spear. You know, it was my ultimate goal to retire from homicide as an elite, top detective. Funny. But anyways, so I wanted to go hide my shame. And I went to a school resource position.
So let's back up here just a little bit, Lily. I want to go back up to the burnout. Okay. Yeah. Did you recognize at the time that was burnout? And I know you've done a lot of work on yourself since then. So did you know then, or are you saying, did you learn what that burnout looks like later? I'm curious if you recognized where you were at in that space when you say, I was hitting burnout and then all these things started happening to you. You caused them.
Not at all. It was all, the universe and the world was against me, and they're the ones that are making me drink, and they're the ones that are, it was me against the world at the time. These things you recognize later on as you show up to Chateau and start working on yourself, and you're like, ego, what? You start cleaning house and you throw the ego out the window, and you're like, no, this is not the person that I want to be. So now right. that I'm coming up on 3 years of sobriety, it's it's very, as the anniversary draws closer, it really is very sobering, pun fully intended, to see myself, to look at myself in the mirror now, and how the picture of my old man, which is what one of my mentors calls it, is nothing like what I look like now.
So sure. Lily, when you were going through this and not recognizing, you know, the issues that were happening, the problems with the drinking and stuff, like specifically, what did Lily's life look like at home and at work?
So at the time, when I was in child crimes, I married my second husband. I divorced by the time I left child crimes. And then in robbery, I married my third husband. And then I divorced because he didn't want me to go into homicide because of the time that it entailed. And then as I was going into homicide, it was my third divorce by then. I had a child with my first husband. She's now 28. That's crazy even to say, because I went to be a cop. I graduated the academy at 26. So now I look at 28-year-olds and I'm like, oh, I'm such a baby. So it's weird. But at the time I got a high-rise condo bachelorette pad in downtown Phoenix with nothing but windows. I was living the high life and spoiling myself, and it was just me and my dog. And that was it. And I started dating somebody that was a former police officer. And that, I think, you know, misery loves company. We just drank ourselves through COVID, which was the end of my spree, if you will, my crazy spree of like drinking and binging and, you know, like missing, started to take a lot of time off. And at that time, my mom was diagnosed with dementia. And then I found out my daughter was actually a victim of abuse, sexual abuse, while I was in basic training. So it kind of, you know, it kind of when it rains and pours type of thing. Which now looking back, I'm glad it all happened at once. So it's like a crash course, and this is the worst of the worst. Let's see how you weather this, and all the tests that God sent me. But then, you know, you grow in the end. So it was just me and my dog, man, and just my friend at the time, or boyfriend at the time. We started drinking. I went to a school resource officer. And I ended up one day drinking too much, and I was taking care of my mom for about a year, and then my brother. I was drinking too much one night, and I came home and I started screaming at him about something that I felt bad that needed to some resentment, and. Broke some things, screamed until the wee hours of the morning. And the next couple of days, he took my mom and he moved her out of my home. So that was a big, big sad moment for me, because I had my brother and my mom living with me. I ended up by myself. And I think it was at that time when I felt alone, and I got fired from this awesome job. And I felt like a loser, worthless, hopeless, helpless. And I ended up attempting suicide, not once but twice. The first time I texted the and to this day it's a close friend of mine, and I you know, inside joke where I texted my lieutenant and I told him, you know, this is all your fault and Jerry's fault, and Jerry at the time was our police chief, because I reached out to her trying to ask for help, and they ignored me. So I was hoping to be a Craig Tiger, I guess, at the time, if it worked. And I was hoping to shed light on the poor care of their officers and just, you know, poor me. I woke up the next day after taking a bunch of pills and I'm like, well, this, that didn't work. So I took some more pills, followed them with alcohol. And I woke up and again, it didn't work 24 hours later. And then a friend of mine came over. She forced her way into my house with, she was trying to bribe me with a latte and a scone. That's the only way that I let her in the house. And she's the one that drove me to the hospital. I ended up inpatient for about 3 days. I came out, pretty much was in such an awful place that I was seeing the shadows move like the devil was in my house and he was trying to come and get me. So I ended up back inpatient. I came for another few days. I came back out and I was doing my IOP when I was told that there were no kids in schools, but I was still taking a lot of time off. So I was being fired from the school resource officer position and I was going to be thrown back into patrol. And for some reason, I just, my ego, I could not see past my ego and being back in patrol was the, you know, the worst, the worst. So I called my union rep and I told him, I'm like, if you send me to patrol, I will show up tomorrow in my full blues hat, shine my boots and blow my brains out in the patrol car. That is my goal in life right now. So if that's what you want for me, I'm telling you right now that that is my plan. So he hung up the phone and then immediately I got a call from, and I'm sorry, Brad, I'm running I'm getting a blank.
Dr. Dara.
Yeah, I got a call from Dr. Dara, and his accent, of course, just disarms you immediately. Mm-hmm. Just he's such a darling to speak to, and I just remember him telling me he's like, I just my one goal in life right now is to keep you alive, and he's like, I gather you don't want to be in Phoenix. I'm like, no, I don't want to be in Phoenix. He's like, well, I have a place where you can go and they can help you. I have a very close friend of mine and he has this place in Utah. It's a beautiful place and you can go and hang out and until you get your head on straight and you know, I'm sure he can help you. And he mentioned Chateau and I went to Chateau and the rest is history, man. It was the best day of my life. And we had a peer there, and I don't know how many people in our class that you've talked to that will quote him, but my mindset at that time, I had hit bottom so hard that my mindset at the time was the way that he said it, is I was willing. He, one day we're in the first responders meeting, and he says, if you tell me today to push a turd down the street with my nose, and that's the only way that I will feel better, I will do it. I am that desperate. And that's how I felt. It was a pretty hard bottom.
So that's.
And so when you went to Chateau, sorry, Brad, when you went to Chateau, were you willing to go? Did you go kicking and screaming? What, how did you get into Chateau? I mean, once you got told about this place in Utah?
That it was pretty much Dr. Dara. And he told me, he's like, if I can get you there, if I can get you a flight, I know somebody, they have this this company that will send you, will get you the flight. You don't have to pay for anything. Just go home, pack your bag. We can get you there in the next couple of days. So I was in the middle of moving at the time, but I think it was probably a couple of weeks. And then I was at Chateau. So I was willing. I was very scared of the shadows in my home. And I don't know if anybody's ever experienced it or you guys have ever experienced it, but I could see remember the movie Ghost?
Mm-hmm. Yep.
where the shadows come out and grab the guy and drag him to hell. That's what I was seeing.
So it's fair to say you were in a really dark, dark place. Well, I actually, it was more of a, for our listeners, I wanted to back up a little bit on your story. There's a couple of things that I'd love to draw out because that's a lot. You just unpacked a lot right there. One is, let's back up to the Craig Tiger. For the listeners that may not know, tell us just the overview, just really one sentence. What are you referring to? You wanted to be a Craig Tiger.
Craig Tiger was an officer that was suicidal. He had some mental health issues. I don't know the background story, but he pretty much wrote, he drove to a city that's 2 hours from Phoenix, that's Flagstaff, Arizona. He went to a cabin and he wrote a letter to the chief at the time. And he talked about his mental health and the fact that he had several times reached out and asked for help and nobody helped him. Everybody just, you'll be fine. You'll be fine. Sleep it off. You'll be fine. And that actually was the result of now the Craig Tiger Act, that you have the availability of getting a certain number of days. You can go on duty to go and talk to a counselor and, receive treatment for your mental health issues. So that's why I wanted.
But it's very well known in Arizona. I don't know that it's well known nationally. I find that nationwide, there's a lot of people across the nation that don't necessarily know what that is or have heard of it. Maybe some, they have something similar, but in Arizona, it's very well known. It's very, it's common language of either Craig Tiger or Tiger Act. So thanks for that. And also I wanted to ask, in relationship to what you were kind of unpacking about your ego and going back to patrol, what is it about, or maybe that's, later on in part of your story, because the best is yet to come on this story, I know, because I know your story. But in that moment, why was it such a mountain to overcome of going back to patrol? Now, if I'm correct in this, Lily, you've been busted back to, in your mind, correct me if I'm wrong here, you've been somewhat of a lower level advancement in SRO, and now you're going to patrol. Am I accurate in that, in what I'm hearing?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that does what to you when you, and I'm not trying to take you back to that space, why was that such an impact, a negative impact on you to say, oh, okay, I'll just go back to patrol?
It was the shame that came with it. It was the, well, wait, weren't you? And, cause I was very, you get to over 12, 15 years on the department, you get to know a lot of people, and they'd seen me in, at crime scenes, and you're always dressed in civilian clothes. You get a take-home car, you get your own cell phone, you get accolades and privileges, if you will. You get never-ending overtime. Your schedule is very flexible. You get a lot of independence. And now you're pushing a patrol car and taking burglary reports. Or, of course, now I'm married to a guy that pushes a patrol car, and I couldn't be prouder. But for me at the time, my ego was so inflated, and so my life revolved so much around the department. My life was the job. So much so that for me to go back to square one, it was, like getting held back a year in high school. Like now my peers are continuing and moving ahead a year, and they're going to graduate. They're going to have their prom, and here I am, a sophomore again. They're not sending me back 1 year. They're sending me back 2 years with the newbies. With the high serial numbers, where I'm 83, 92, and I'm going, you know, going on patrol with the 10,000, 11,000 numbers. It was just unfathomable. And Lily's little mind of a little prissy princess that did not want to have her manicure ruined in a patrol car.
Sure.
How pathetic is that?
Well, there is certainly a, you know, this, there's a, once you start into this path of higher level services, which takes an advanced skill level and arguably an advanced intellect to do child crimes and robbery and homicide, that has a lot of baggage that comes with it too. However, I mean, just seeing the repeated, what, fill in the blank, what did you see for days and weeks and months on end with?
Well, that's what I pretty much got to unpack when I got to Chateau. You know, you get to sit down with these awesome, amazing angels that are at Chateau, and that's where they ask you, like, okay, what's the problem? And you don't realize it. It doesn't come to mind. It's all in your subconscious, and your subconscious is the one that's running the show, and you have no idea that it's all this pain that's boiling inside. It's all these child abuse, all these. I was a forensic interviewer, and I had to sit through hundreds of interviews of children crying in the chair across a room from me, and telling me these stories about what they had to, you know, what they saw, what they smelled, what they felt, what they heard, in terrible, terrible situations. And a lot of times, there were several times where they would bring us children that may have witnessed this as a homicide. And I got to interview them. And as a Spanish speaker, I got, you know, a little bit more than usual. And it was, I went to child crimes in a time where they were changing leadership, and it was the workload. I don't think people in the normal world, or even in patrol, or in, you know, in Drug Enforcement Bureau, you name it, they don't realize the amount of reports that come into that unit of sexual abuse, physical abuse, neglect, the amount of children that are suffering out there. And at the time when they were removing the old regime and the new regime, and they pushed out a bunch of detectives, I was probably less than a year into the unit, and they come up to me and they put 60, a stack like this big of 60 folders. And they're like, and these are now your cases. This other Spanish speaking detective was not taking care of their caseload, and now they're yours. And it was to the point where one day I was on my day off and I was hiking, and I just collapsed in the middle of the hike. And I'm like, all my babies. And that's all I kept saying. All my babies are on my desk, and I can't, they're vulnerable. They may be being re-victimized, and I am not taking care of them. So
they're not safe.
They're not safe. So, and now to add insult to injury, I went into homicide, where I'm seeing as a new detective, you go into any and all, you know, deaths where it's not an apparent homicide. As a new detective, they call them a tag. So you're taking every single tag for the first 3 months in a homicide. That's a lot. That's a lot of
That's
gore.
A lot.
It was a lot. So my bucket, already pouring that into an already full bucket, it was a lot. And just my little brain, my little body could no longer take it. And I was not prepared with the proper tools to process all that information, which is what I was able to unload at Chateau.
I think that's a great segue to go into Chateau, a little bit of Chateau. Talk to us about that. Your time at Chateau did what for you? And how?
opened the floodgates. Brain spotting was amazing. It was very enlightening and very much, I think pretty much to sum up, Chateau was like having brain surgery to a cancerous tumor. And they pretty much took an ice cream scoop and just, you know, cut everything open and took an ice cream scoop and just scooped the cancer out. But in the process of scooping out that cancer, they, you know, use the tissue has to bleed, the tissue has to scar, the tissue has to regenerate, and eventually there will be a scar there. But in, you know, I found out that I was an alcoholic. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I found out, you know, that I was in depression, that I had suffered from anxiety, that I talked too much, and my peers would pick on me because I talked too much. And now I'm trying to be, yeah, I'm in the middle of being diagnosed for ADHD now.
What?
Yeah, no. Stop it. So anyways, yeah, I learned about camaraderie. I learned about having shilt, you know, and getting rid of it and taking the trash out, and how I don't know, it didn't work like that for you, I don't think, but for me, art therapy was one of the biggest breakthroughs I had. And I think it was your first or second night there, wasn't it? Where I was howling at the moon.
I think it was the second night. And
you
connected with something really, really dark.
Yep. So I was howling at the moon. Thankfully, Jackie was still there and she was able to walk me through it, but that was a big chunk of my story. And while I was there, there was I don't know if you heard of his name, but there's this old man River that showed up, and he spoke Spanish, so I resonated, so we connected right away in that manner. But old man River,
he's been on here before. He's been on here before, so you can reference him.
I can imagine. But so old man River's name is Jorge. A good old ice man. One day he told me, he's like, hey, you know, I'm a Catholic, and I wake up at the wee hours of the morning and I pray my rosary, and I'm going to ask for a computer so I could watch my service. So he pretty much, I grew up Catholic. So he brought that back into my life. He brought my higher power back into my life. And now, you know, once I came out of there, just a few minutes ago, actually, right before this podcast, I was meeting with my mentor, my spiritual mentor, and I'm getting close to my 3-year sober anniversary in less than 30 days. So we were reminiscing. Yeah, we were reminiscing about, you know, how it is that God, my higher power, I call him God, and God came back into my life and rescued me from that darkness. Because when you're in the deepest, darkest place of your life is when you say, God, please, God. But you don't remember him when you're, you know, at the tip of the spear being the best, baddest, biggest detective. You know, you don't remember him then. You don't remember him when you're at the middle of the bars and saying, drinks on me.
That's right.
Or you're skydiving or motorcycle racing or all the crazy shit that I did. He came back into my life and pulled me out of that darkness, man. And I came out of Chateau and with a solid IOP, kept in touch with all my peers. To this day, you know, I text you less than you text me, of course, but I still keep in touch. I keep in touch with all the big names at Chateau, like, you know, Rob and Jorge and all the OGs. And I started going to church, and now I do all these Bible studies and home groups, and I joined this 12-step program and got me a 12-step mentor and groups there. And you know, before I knew it, God started sending me all these angels that, you know, just started showing me the path, the yellow, the proverbial yellow brick road that led me to be a better person and to smile all the time and live in gratitude and reconnect with this man that was a really good friend. I met him 18 years ago when I was on my second squad. It was my second squad right out of the academy. And I met this character. He's like a giant leprechaun. And I ended up marrying him about a little bit over a year ago. And he's just a huge teddy bear, man. And it's been such a blessing to be on the other side of the rainbow and look back to 3 years and say, wow, I look nothing like that. And I don't even speak the same way anymore or carry myself in the same way anymore. And now I'm just full of hope and light. And, you know, over the past, these past holidays, I was hosting at my mom's house, which was very, you know, it's a, you know, surreal. And my cousin showed up out of the blue to spend some time with my mother. And he looks at me and he's just, you can see like the jaw drop, you know, as I'm speaking and talking to everybody. And he's like, wait. And he looks me up and down and he interrupts me. And he's like, stop. He's like, what are you doing in your life? What are you doing with yourself? He's like, you are so bright and you have this shine about you. And he was so excited, you know, and he was so genuine when he said it. And it was the best gift, the best Christmas gift that I could have gotten, you know, about you could have given me a brand new car. But that moment right there where he stops, like, stop the music. What are you doing? You are so happy and so cheery and the light in your eyes. He's like, I am so happy for you, Lily. I am so happy for you. And so much so that the day after I'm talking, I'm, you know, telling a story or whatever. And he again interrupts me and he's like, whatever you're doing, keep doing it. You are just a different person. And this is a person that I used to party at his house when I first divorced, you know, like 20 years ago during my first divorce. I partied my little keister off at his house, late party, seeing the sunrise, drinking in his backyard.
I know you, and maybe the listeners didn't pick up, but we're obviously here, you know, on video, and I can see you getting emotional in that. And that moment where you're hearing somebody recognize that hard work, that's the emotion, right? Because that's, speak to that. What was that you just showed right there?
It was pride. It was gratefulness. You know, of course I didn't tell him what, because I was dragged through the mud and I was sinking into this, you know, quicksand or quick mud, if you will. I didn't tell him. I just, it was just somebody was seeing my scars and they were saying that they were beautiful. And that's how it felt. It just filled me with, you know, this warm and fuzzy feeling inside, and what he was seeing exactly what I felt, and he was recognizing it. He was seeing the sunshine that I feel inside, because now I wake up and I'm like, sunshine. You know, obviously it's not every day that you're, you know, glitter and unicorns. Not every day, of course. I don't know if everybody feels glitter and unicorns, but the majority of the time, where before it was, you know, it was fleeting. Before I would go skydiving and search for that, you know, that adrenaline, that dopamine dump, and I would go racing and in the, you know, in the twisties and turnies, and that's when you feel the dopamine dump. or diving. But
he's
with
talking
sharks.
About something of great substance. He's referring to something that's deeper.
He's
than just.
He's referring to somebody, something that is long lasting. He's referring right. to something that is deep in your being. And
in that moment, you already have experienced it. If and I've walked this path with you, so I know personally, and I've got a story to share quickly with that. But in that moment, he's recognizing a lot of hard work. Is that fair?
Yes. Yes.
And then you subsequently.
And I pretty much at the, when we said goodbye, I said, when, if you want to know my secret, it's all about, you know, mind, spirit, and body, and having those three aligned, and going back to basics. It's not about the diplomas on the wall or what my shield says, whether it says, you know, police. You know, patrol, detective, whatever. It's not that. I am not the job. I am me. I am Lily. And as we did when we went to the one retreat where we had to step on the stage, and you had to say, you know, what you were.
And Knight in Rusty Armor.
Knight in Rusty Armor. Mm. Thank you. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just being badass, just being me. And finding that pride and that acceptance and that happiness and looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, I'm a child of God and I am white as snow.
I love that. Well, I actually just recently ran into a friend just recently, just a week or so ago. I ran into a friend at a grocery store. I hadn't seen him in, you know, several years, and he made that same quick observation, and he said, you look so good. And I said, you know, I'm running and working out. He said, that's not what I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And he and in that moment, there's just a lot of, you know, kind of this, you know, that feels good to hear. It's a deeper compliment than just you look good. It's, man, you look good. You know, you've worked hard, and it was nice. It was nice to hear. And so, yeah.
So Lily, I have, first of all, almost 3 years here in a few days. I think that's amazing. Yay. Congratulations.
Yay.
Yes, that's awesome. I'm curious to know, like, once you left Chateau and transitioned back to home, what were a couple of your challenges as far as healing and how to transition from, you're at Chateau and everybody's there rooting for you and everybody's there helping you. And you've got this great group of people every day. And then naturally there's got to be probably a little bit of a letdown once you leave and go home, because you don't wake up the next morning with everybody around you like you've had for the past however many days you spent at Chateau. So what were a couple of your challenges in going back home is to into your healing journey
and hitting the landing and then not resisting the urge of getting right back on the airplane and flying back. Yeah, that was a pretty scary moment. You know, to leave me to my own devices, it's hard not to go back and roll back into the bad, you know, the character defects or the bad habits. I knew at the time that it was do this or die. It was ride or die. Get on your IOP, go to a meeting, call this person, and just being intentional. That was challenging. And I wasn't coming back home to a husband, a wife, a mom, a dad, my daughter. She was independent. I moved in and I was by myself with my dog. And then eventually I got Luna from Chateau. That's my service dog. But
lucky Luna, lucky Luna.
Yeah. And it was hard because I Actually, I think one of the things, my worst mistakes was to start dating right away. And it was hard because I actually started this relationship and I pretty much fell on my face, as everybody said I would. So I guess that's one of my regrets, that it was, and that's not a, actually I digress, not a regret. It's as at my, one of my mentors calls it AFGO, AFGO. And it's another freaking growth opportunity. So it's not, now I don't have regrets. I have no regrets. I have AFGOs. I have growth opportunities. So anytime that I would, you know, and I shouldn't be at 3 years. I should be at 3.5 years like Brad here, or, you know, closer to four. So I did drink because of that person that I dated. And it was, thankfully, it was just a one day, and I'm not the majority, because the majority, well, when the wheels fall off, the wheels really fall off. So I'm grateful that it was only one day, and it was AFGO, man. It was another growth opportunity to not allow somebody else to influence or jeopardize the goal, which is to find yourself and to find that gold inside you that makes you shine when you walk into any room. You walk into any room and you light it up. If the darkness around you is too dark, then you don't belong there. But yeah, that was.
I distinctly remember, if I can share on that, if you don't mind, I distinctly remember when that happened and how upset you were, and feeling like you had failed. And
oh yes,
not watching that and realizing, you know, I didn't drink, but I was encountering my own challenges and my own failures, and recognizing that in myself and saying, man, this is a marathon. This is a long game we're playing here. I just remember thinking that, and even talking to you, I was talking to myself as well when we were having some of those conversations about, you know, what now, what next, you know, don't give up, you know, settle back in. What are your pillars of what you're supposed to be doing? And look at you. I mean, you're here today, a shining light. I'm proud of you. It's amazing.
And if I may share one more thing, is that when you say I was telling you, but I was talking to myself, and that's one of the major things I think that has kept us, our group together. And correct me if I'm wrong, but when you help somebody else, when you get that phone call and somebody says, I'm hurting, help me. When you get to share or to speak to somebody else, you hear yourself. And I think that's why my mentors have always told me, help somebody else. Mm-hmm. Just when you're hurting, go to a meeting and start talking to somebody that, if you see them in pain, go talk to them. Even if it's, hi, good morning, how are you doing? Go talk to that person. And sure, it gets you out of yourself. And then hearing yourself speak and hearing yourself cheer somebody else on, you are telling yourself those same words. And that was huge. That was just in it. And when I did it, when I had the courage to come up to somebody and say, hey, it's going to be okay. Just one more day, man. Just keep trucking. Then I could do it another day.
Well, I think, and Max, did you have anything? I think we'll kind of start wrapping up and circling up. I don't want to cut you off if you had a follow-up.
No, and like I said, I just think, Lily, I think it's great. I mean, there is that glow about you. I mean, I didn't know you before, but there is that glow about you that you are doing amazing. You're doing great. And I'm super proud of you after hearing your story. And I think it's amazing. And I'm glad. And I wanted you, one of the things you said that I really liked was not, you know, once you're taking care of yourself and the healing, that your job no longer defined who you were. It didn't matter what title you had at work. And I think so many people, we have that ego, and that does define so many people, and it causes so many problems. So to hear you say that that no longer was part of your story, that it wasn't going to affect you anymore, it wasn't going to define you, I love that. I love that you were all about taking care of Lily, and that shows, and I'm super proud
of you.
Thank you.
And now I'm actually looking into starting my own business. Wow. In fashion design. So that's my next step, and moving to Minnesota. So very, very, very grateful and very excited.
I love that for you. Lily?
Arizona.
Sorry, Max, go ahead.
I just say Arizona to that's Minnesota. Right. Wow.
For sure. Lily, this has been awesome. If I were going to kind of give you, I'm going to tee this up a little bit for you, kind of if you were to pass on any kind of advice or wisdom to the listeners out here of people that have maybe either been in or are in currently similar places, what would your word to them be?
Higher power. I didn't do this. It was my higher power. It was God that did this for me. Yes, yeah. You have to admit that you have a problem, but we don't do it alone.
Yeah. That's awesome.
I love that.
Yeah. Lucky Lily, I am sure glad
Thank you so much.
Took time out of your day to come on the No One Fights Alone podcast. We love you. We're proud of you. Thank you for your time, and thank you for telling your story.
Thank you, guys. We'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Lily.
Chateau Health and Wellness is a 16-bed treatment facility nestled in the foothills of the Wasatch Mountains in Midway, Utah. Chateau's First Responder Resiliency Program is designed to treat the unique challenges and issues that first responders encounter in the course of their careers. Chateau's comprehensive and highly individualized approach to treatment addresses more than just the presenting issues. It addresses the why. Each of their seasoned, trauma-trained, and culturally competent therapists utilize evidence-based, specialized therapies to treat trauma at its core and enable clients to begin the healing process while developing a resilient and healthy relationship with stress. Chateau Health and Wellness is trusted by departments and agencies from around the country to treat responders and veterans. In fact, it is one of only a handful of facilities nationwide that is vetted and approved to treat members of the Fraternal Order of Police. For more information or to speak to a representative, go to chateaurecovery.com or call 888-507-5031.